Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and co-hosting with me today is Kristen Polansi. She is a doula, new doula.
Yes.
She is just about to finish her chiropractic training.
Soon, yes.
And focusing very heavily on pregnancy and pediatric care. She's got a little toddler at home and a husband to deal with. So I don't know how you guys do it. I would never...
You told me that I should get a wife.
Everybody should get a wife. Everybody should. Even if you're married to a dude, you should still have a wife. That's just my two cents.
I agree.
Today we're talking about the path to midwifery. There's lots of different kinds of midwife, and some people go to nursing school first and then become midwives. They're certified nurse midwives. But there's another path. You can become a direct entry midwife or a professional midwife, which means you can go straight to midwifery school and do your training there. Our guest on the podcast today is Dr. Jennifer Angel. She is a chiropractor. She is a doula. And she is now a student midwife. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you because, there's a lot of parallels in our lives. We both went to chiropractic school around the same time and then graduated and found ourselves in knee-deep in bumps. But our way of sort of getting there was very different. And I want to talk about more about yours. My understanding is that you kind of always were attracted to the world of pregnancy and birth.
That's right. Birth is in my soul, and I can't run away from it. And the pull toward midwifery school started a long time ago. So,
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yes.
Why do I always feel like saying that every time somebody says Minnesota?
Because so that's cool. The way we say it.
You do.
I'm from Minnesota.
Minnesota. Yeah,
right.
It is. And also, there's a weird Al Yankovic song. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's called The Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota.
I love him.
I heard it only once, but I can't get it out of my head. And now it will be there for the entire next hour.
I have not heard of that.
Cold in Minnesota.
Very cold, and that's why I don't live there anymore.
Okay.
I love my family, but...
they still there?
They are. Okay. I was born and raised in Minnesota. I have a huge family. I have three brothers and three sisters.
Wow.
And I just have one brother that's out here in California and one brother that's in Toronto, but everybody else is still in Minnesota.
Wow.
So I have aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, my mom, my dad, like everybody's still in Minnesota.
Wow.
I lived there for 3 decades, and 1 year I was and you have to come from a cold state like that to understand that when you're shoveling, you're not just shoveling snow. You also have what's called an ice pick.
Hmm.
Have you ever heard of an ice pick?
So like
for
the deep layers of ice underneath the snow
from the sidewalk.
The snow? Yeah,
that goes to your front door. Like, I don't think anybody really realizes that, or even, you know, like, what are the scrapers, you know, for the windshield and that sort of thing. And
people were, because I grew up in New York, which also gets snow and ice, not as much, nearly as much. Yeah. But like some of our friends had the driveways that had heated pipes going through it.
Yes.
So it would melt all the snow.
And you know what was a great present when I was in my early 20s? People would buy you a car starter for Christmas or for your birthday.
A car starter? Oh, remote car starter?
Remote, yeah. So that when you're in the restaurant and you're finishing up with dessert and it's 30 below out, you click, click, and it starts your car. And then it's warm when you get out there.
Ooh.
And the same is opposite for like in, you know, when it's 100
really
degrees.
Hot.
And it's,
you leave the air on.
You know, the state bird is out, which is the mosquito, and it's hot and it's humid. You know, so the car starter comes in handy for all seasons in Minnesota. But going back, I remember shoveling one particular nasty winter, and I'm like, what am I doing? And I really feel like intuitively, I always knew that I would live in a warm state. And my brother had been living out here in LA for 14 years, and I was like, I'm coming out to visit, bro. And I bought a one-way plane ticket. And
that's quite a visit.
I didn't go back.
Like, are you still here?
My little brother drove my car out like months later, and I had all my stuff shipped to me. I came out with a suitcase and my golf clubs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Welcome.
So, and
how long ago was that?
11 years ago.
Oh, wow. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Yeah, you really can't go back after that.
I can't. My heart is here.
Where did you go? So you said from early on, birth is in your soul.
Yes, it is. It has been. I really feel like I was born to attend births and be a birth provider. I said I have three brothers and three sisters, and I grew up playing house and playing with my dolls. And us sisters would put our dolls inside our shirts, and we would birth our babies vaginally, and we would put our babies to our bare chest with our flat chest, and we would nurse our babies.
I can't believe none of you had placenta previa.
Oh, I know. Like, but we handled the hemorrhages like no
business.
Like, nobody bled out. It was amazing.
Anybody do water birth with their baby doll?
Gosh, I don't think that we knew about water birth yet. But like, as a child, even, I was drawn to just this maternal pull toward babies and pregnancy and mothering, just really mothering. And I remember going to the county fair. I know there's a county fair here, but in Minnesota, the county fairs are a big deal. And there'd be these tables that had like the models of conception and then the baby in you know the second month and the fifth month and the sixth month. And I was just like just enamored
with it. At the county fair?
Yeah, at the county fair.
I used to just sing like squash.
I know. But I would be
apple
like
pie.
riveted on the growth of the baby in the womb. And
as
my parents,
a kid.
My dad would be like, Jennifer, get away from there. And I was like, but you know, and I just textbooks, anything I could get my hands on. And my stepmother ran a daycare, and so there were babies. Like I mean, and having four younger siblings, I was a mother. I was just
a motherly
type. Oh
yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Like where you fell.
Yeah, I was third in line, and then I had four after me.
Four
and,
behind you.
And then with a home
so you're
daycare.
Like, wow, like, a middle child in a large family.
Yeah, I had a baby on each hip, and I could change a diaper and feed a baby and burp a baby all with like, you know, my pinkies. Like it was so natural to me and it was so easy for me. And I can continue on with that. Like healthcare is something that I was thrust into, unfortunately, because my mother passed away when I was 4 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She died unexpectedly from a heart attack.
When you were four?
When I was four. So she had five beautiful babies that she left behind. I say they're babies. My brother was eight. My sister was six. I was four. My little brother was two. I'm so sorry. My little sister was two, and my baby brother was 6 months old when my mother passed away.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Yeah. And so unexpectedly and tragically, that obviously changed our lives and changed my family's dynamic and changed everything for me. And out of something so tragic and unexpected and sad, I am where I am today because of that situation.
How old was your mom?
My mom was 34.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
And she had no diagnosis of any heart disease and nothing. I mean, she had been under the care of doctors. She had given birth to five beautiful children, completely natural. My dad always talked about my mom's pregnancies and my mom's deliveries. And they were beautiful and they were amazing and no complications. And so, like, just growing up with my dad's stories, and my mother was also very descriptive with her birth stories, and all of us had a baby book, which is really amazing.
That's nice.
And my mother wrote our birth story. And so I have my birth story in my mother's handwriting in my baby book, which is in a cupboard at my house. Like, it goes with me forever. So, you know, birth wasn't something to fear. Like, it was in her writing how it was amazing. Like, she was, I don't know why it comes back to the county fair all the time, but, like, when I was born in August, and they were at the county fair when my mom started having contractions, and she wrote about that in the book, you know, and it's just beautiful.
That's really sweet.
So, that's really nice.
They were checking to see if there was a familial tendency for what my mother had. She was diagnosed with heart arrhythmia and cardiomyopathy. On her autopsy report, she had 90% occlusion of her coronary arteries. And
Yeah, 34.
At 34. It's, you know, looking back, you know, this was a long time ago. and I don't think that they had, you know, as much advancement in medicine as they do today. But my birth mother, my mother, was always large for her. You know, in pictures I even see from when she was in second grade that she was like the largest child in the class, you know, in the class picture. And she was fed all the same things and was brought up the same way as her siblings. She was one of five. And none of her siblings were overweight, you know. My father actually said to me that some of her pregnancies she actually lost weight. But had healthy pregnancies. So I decided that when I went off to college that I was going to go into medical research because I really wanted to save the world and I really wanted to do research on heart disease. And that was what I was going to do, is I was going to save the world through medical research. And so I went to college, and my undergraduate degree was chemistry. And my dad, I remember him even like, why are you doing chemistry? That was like your worst class in high school. And I was like, if you challenge me, I'm totally going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And so I totally slayed my chemistry degree, right? But I was in my last year of college, and my best friend got hurt at work. She slipped on wet floor, and she hurt her back. And so her employer said, oh, you need to go to a chiropractor. And she grew up with chiropractic, so that was no problem for her. She was like, okay, Jen, you're going to come with me. We're going to go to the chiropractor. I'm like, you're going to go where? I had never heard of a chiropractor. I didn't know what chiropractic was. So she pretty much drugged me with her. And it was crazy because this totally dates me as well, but she opened the Yellow Pages. We didn't have the internet. Well, I mean, we had the internet probably, but we didn't have cell phones or anything like that.
She opened
the Yellow Pages and looked under chiropractors that had their advertisement. And she was like, oh, I've seen that one on the main drag in town. That's where we're going. So we went to that chiropractor, and it was the first time that I'd ever been in a chiropractic office. It's the first time that I'd ever seen a chiropractic adjustment. That doctor was amazing. He brought me back with her, and I was sitting in the corner when he adjusted her, and I was laughing so hard. I could not stop laughing. I mean, you know, the sounds that were being made and the positions he was putting her in. And even at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I could do that for the rest of my life. But I saw her instantly get better. And so my paradigm shifted instantly. Mm. And I went back and I talked with that chiropractor and I shadowed him. And then I went back to my hometown and there was a local chiropractor that was a family friend and I shadowed him. And it was so amazing. Like, I saw him putting up x-rays and people asking for second opinions and people asking about supplements and diet and all these types of things. And it just resonated with me. Like, I was like, wow, this is something that I would love to pursue. And I actually went back to my counselor at college and I talked to him. I said, I really think that I'm interested in chiropractic school. And he just grabbed a book off the shelf, like literally 2 feet away from him. And it was a list of all the chiropractic colleges in the United States. And he like kind of, you know, slid it across to me. And I picked it up. And I remember looking at Los Angeles College of Chiropractic. I think there was one of those at that time, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Yes.
And I remember even getting like a DVD and like some materials from them and talking back with my guidance counselor again. And my guidance counselor, it's always interesting. I say that there's very key points in your life where somebody is very influential, you know, one way or the other, positive or negative. And I'm super thrilled that he pointed me in the direction toward and really encouraged me with my pursuit of chiropractic school. But one thing he said is that you're born and raised in Minnesota, so you need to go to school in Minnesota. Hmm. I'm like, what? Looking back, I'm like, because like here I am living thousands and thousands of miles away from my original hometown. And so eventually I did get out of Dodge. But I did go to Northwestern College of Chiropractic. And that was where the biggest shift toward maternity care and midwifery and everything was woken up in my soul and stirred up. And forever.
During chiropractic school?
It was in chiropractic school, yes.
Well, that's interesting because, I mean, in our chiropractic training, I went to Life University in Georgia. There's very little on – there's some on pediatrics, but very little on pregnancy and birth.
Wow.
Did you have a lot of training or coursework on it?
Well, my favorite classes were embryology. I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, yeah,
but
we did do embryology.
Obstetrics was probably the key class, and then pediatrics, of course. But our professor that taught obstetrics was just so much into well woman care, and when we did the labs and we did learn about, you know, breast exams or even PAPs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, like, not like I choose to, like, that's like my passion is doing those types of things, but I don't know, woman care, just I was pulled toward that too. But in obstetrics, in that class, when we learned about normal birth, I decided at that point in time, when I was 20 years old, not having a boyfriend, no kids anywhere on my radar, that I was going to birth my babies at home, that I would hire a midwife. Like, it was just so natural for me. Like, it was a no-brainer. And then 10 years later, when I did have my first baby, I had her at home. And then 8.5 years after that, I had my second baby, and I had her at home, too.
Oh, wow. Congrats and congrats.
Thank you. Thank you.
So after you finish, I mean, what else can you do with it? So you're in chiropractic school. You take this obstetrics class and embryology, and you're excited about it because birth
so
is in your
excited.
Soul.
Yes.
And you already make your future personal birth plans. But what else can you do with that? I mean, as a chiropractor, there's not a whole lot of obstetric interplay.
Exactly. So right after school, I enrolled in the ICPA program, so the International Chiropractic Pediatric Association, and I know that I needed to specialize in treating pregnant women and children, and I did that. And through one of the many continuing education classes that I took, there was one very prominent chiropractor who was lecturing, and she explained that she was also a birth doula. And I was like, a birth what? So that was the first time that I'd ever heard that
term.
So I graduated about 15 years ago. And so 14 years ago was my first, the first term, doula, was presented in front of me. And I was flabbergasted. I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, wait a minute, like, you're a chiropractor, but you attend births. Oh my gosh, I've got to talk to you. So after the lecture, I talked to her. And like I said, I think it was actually in chiropractic school that when I was in my obstetrics class, if I had done things over, I most likely would have just went straight to midwifery, you know? But I didn't know anything about midwives until I was deep in probably third trimester, you know, chiro school, and I had already put in how much time and effort and 8 years of school. You know, you do 4 years of undergraduate, which was my chemistry degree, and then I'm in 4 years of a postgraduate program, and then I'm looking at possibly, like, becoming a midwife as well. But I talked to this particular chiropractor, and I talked to her afterward, and I learned a little bit more about her being a doula, and I said, gosh, you know what? I said, I really, 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 really would love to be a midwife. And I don't think she quite understood where I was coming from or what I was trying to say. It was because I knew that if I were to become a midwife, that I would have to do a full new training and that I would have to have another license. But she said, oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry, but you can't be a midwife. She said, because under our license, we're not allowed to sever body tissues. We can't cut umbilical cords. We're not allowed to practice obstetrics. And so I just remember leaving that feeling just deflated.
Yeah, I
can't be a midwife. Like, and I just think it was just a miscommunication between the two of us. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of pushed it away. Mm-hmm. And so I pursued my boutique practice. I would say I've had a boutique practice since I started practicing chiropractic. It's always been a specialized practice. I see bumps every day, just like you. Mm-hmm. You know, 8 to 10 pregnant women coming in every day, you know, 3 to 4 infants, you know, some children. And it's been very empowering, and it's been very validating. But what really gets me is being present at birth, you know. And so 15 years ago, I became a licensed chiropractor. 14 years ago, I did my birth doula training through DONA, which is one of the largest organizations that trains and certifies doulas, which you're DONA certified, correct?
I'm DONA trained.
Oh, DONA trained. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I'll ever send in my certification packet.
Oh, you didn't do the whole program.
Well, I did it. It's sitting on my desk. Yeah. I just, I don't know, 100 births later, I'm so busy with everything else going on.
You forgot
on.
To do your paperwork.
You just need to send it in.
No.
You got to send it in.
Yeah, I could send it in.
So I sent it in, and I've been certified since then. So, and I've attended over 300 births. I don't even count anymore. Either as a certified birth doula, as a midwife assistant. I did a lot of midwife assistant births, and now as a student midwife. So
that's so exciting. I mean, I just feel the look. My progression was very. There's a lot of parallels, but a lot of differences at the same time. I mean, shocking number of parallels. I always thought I grew up in a very medical environment, too, just a more Western approach to medicine. And I always thought, like, the best doctor in the world could figure out exactly how much antihistamine and how much pain reliever in it and put it all together and add a little blue dye and you have NyQuil, you know. But and that's what I would do. I would be like, oh, which symptoms do you have? And I'd just figure out exactly how to just like you said, a pill for every ill.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to, like, go to – I was 7, I think, when I took a random – I stepped in on a CPR class. And I saw what was happening. I was like, I want to put my hands on people and help them. And then I just became first aid, responding to emergencies, lifeguard training. And before you know it, at 17, I'm training to be an EMT and work in ambulances. And I was going to be the world's greatest surgeon or something surgeon. I didn't know what exactly. But then also my father died at a young age. He was 48 and had a sudden heart attack one night, and he was gone. And it just made me take this big step back and rethink my approach to healthcare. And so I sort of fell in love with chiropractic and massage together, went to school for both at the same time. And the shift into the obstetric world was a total slingshot that I was not expecting. It was just I kind of discovered a connection between certain types of back pain and infertility. And when I was pursuing that and trying to figure out the common source of both and how we can overcome it, we started a program to help people naturally get their bodies in a more fertile place, natural fertility boosting program. And within a year, we had all these bumps in the office. And they said, I want to keep coming to you. Because remember, they came with back pain and infertility. So when you help them overcome the infertility and they still have some back pain to work through, they want to keep coming. And I didn't know anything about it. Just our training in chiropractic school was so minimal about chiropractic for pregnancy. And so I looked around and I also went to the ICPA looking for answers and help and more training and guidance. And so I spoke on the phone to other chiropractors around the country who were doing prenatal care. And just to like not turn away my clients who wanted me to keep working with them. And at first it sort of felt like a driver's permit. I'm like, I can do chiropractic on you while you're pregnant safely. But then like the more you do it, you get good and confident and realize how much you could do for the pregnancy and for that mom during her pregnancy and birth and beyond with chiropractic and other modalities like it. So, and then I was born Breech as a kid. And so somehow I ended up surrounded by Breech and making a Breech movie and other things like that. My mother, I don't think she wrote down my birth story like your mom did, but my kids, I don't write down their stories, but I do tell them at stand-up comedy shows, which makes them a little uncomfortable. But in a lot of ways, we have this similar background. And then, again, the natural progression was if we can help people with the positioning of the baby during pregnancy, could we help people with positioning of the baby during birth when the baby's not Breech, but let's say posterior or not in an ideal position to come down? That's how I got called to birth when I was at a pet store one Sunday trying very hard not to buy a pet with my kids. And a midwife called and said, this mom is, her baby's kind of stuck posterior. She's in a lot of intensity, but in labor has stalled and isn't moving. Can you come help get this baby rotated? And I said, I have no idea, but I'm on my way to try. And she had a very great experience after a couple of adjustments and some body work. And so word got out and then more people were calling for birth. And I ended up at some births in a really uncomfortable situations where there was no doula. And the mom was sort of wanting more doula support. Looking at me, I'm like, I don't know. I just rub stuff and crack things. That's when I did the donut training. And my wife is a doula, too. She did the donut training as well. We did it together. And, you know, one thing led to another. I can see the passion for, like, how it's just, like, not enough. You know, you want more fix and more fix and more fix. But on the other hand, there's so much responsibility for a midwife.
Right.
So much responsibility. I'm really grateful to you and the other men and women who become midwives and really take on that responsibility so that you can help women feel empowered and have the kind of birth experiences that they want to. But for me, I'm like at the end of the line on how much I'm going to do.
Well, I was wondering if you'd ever become a male midwife.
I mean, the thought had crossed my mind a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I love what my role now that I play during the pregnancy in the office, getting ready for birth, after birth, you know, helping her gain her strength back and regain her pre-pregnancy, everything.
It's so interesting for me to listen to the both of you talk because you're so seasoned and then in like the height of your career and I'm just this like little peon starting from the bottom. But I wish sometimes, especially being in school, that more people that worked with this population came into school because all we hear in school is that pregnancy is a contraindication. Relative.
For chiropractic?
For anything.
Oh,
like,
right.
But mostly for chiropractic, but anything that you try. Like, I remember being in a selective course for instrument-assisted soft tissue, and the teacher was like, well, you cannot be worked on, because I was pregnant.
Ah.
And I was like, why not? I was like, I can do this to myself. Well, did you not see my presentation? It is a relative contraindication. If something happens to you because we did this soft tissue work in your pregnancy, you will then say that it's because of what I did to you. And, you know, we can't have that liability.
Right. There's liability concerns with everything in pregnancy.
I was like, someone could fall, but a normal person could do the same thing. Like,
yeah, but look what happens when you try to get a prenatal massage.
True.
It's like rubbing on suntan lotion.
Yeah,
it's like generally very soft.
Effleurage.
Because we're afraid to use any pressure, we're afraid to touch the shoulder, touch the foot, touch the ankle, touch the hand.
That's unfortunate that that's
But that's
you
like
know,
a
the,
core, part of your core curriculum is the, teaching you that that's
what
not
to do.
A, yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. About, you know, I just did a continuing ed. I was a presenter on chiropractic care in pregnancy. And one thing that I did is I pulled up the rules and regulations of the state of California. And there's a section that clearly states the chiropractors can treat and work, well, can work on pregnant women. It says you cannot practice obstetrics, but it clearly says, including pregnant women, that we can work on them and adjust them. And I really wish there was more confidence and you know,
it's interesting because when it comes to ultrasound, the scope of practice for chiropractors says that we can use ultrasound both diagnostically and therapeutically. But then it also very clearly says, but not to look at a baby.
Yes. And I'm happy for that in our laws, in our rules.
It's sort of weird, though, if you're doing diagnostic ultrasound, you have to look away when you get near
the
baby.
Don't look at the baby.
Yeah. All right. This is a fascinating discussion. Yeah. I would like to learn more now about your midwifery studies, but we're going to take a quick break from a word from our sponsor, and we're going to come right back with Dr. Jennifer Angel. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, back with our co-host, Kristen. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And our guest, Dr. Jennifer Angel, who's on this wonderful journey from giving birth with her dolls at home to the county fair, all the way to a mishap into chiropractic school, falling in love with obstetrics, becoming a doula, being told you couldn't be a midwife, and then saying, boo to you.
Exactly.
And now you're a midwifery student. You mentioned in passing that you had two home births.
Yes.
What were those experiences like, given all the birth exposure you had yourself?
My births were amazing. I had attended over 100 births prior to the birth of my first daughter.
Oh, wow. So you'd seen a lot.
I had. And I thought I was a pretty rockin' doula. But, man, after giving birth, like, you come back and it's just a whole different level of being a doula once you've actually been through birth, you know? Mm-hmm. So I apologize for those first 100. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. So I had established a pediatric and prenatal practice here in Orange County. Mm-hmm. And I had networked with – I was already so deeply involved in the birthing community. I knew so many of the midwives. I knew so many of the doulas. I knew the birth educators and there was a and so when I got pregnant, there was one midwife that she would regularly call me to adjust women in labor, you know, if they were having, you know, a back labor with a posterior baby, if the baby was asynclitic, which means the baby was coming down a little bit crooked, or if there was just a stall or some other type of dystocia. I joke sometimes that I was on speed dial with some of the local midwives, you know, not just for adjusting women in labor, but also like after the baby was born, if the baby was having like a slower transition or was just, you know, a little grunty or just needed a little bit of assistance. And that, let me tell you, is so rewarding to be able to come in and adjust a baby that is literally minutes old.
Yeah, that's incredible.
And makes such a change. And for that midwife to say this baby would have been transferred had you not come. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny that you talked about being at the pet store. One time I was on my bike and I was on a ride. So I'm in my kit, my spandex kit and my bike helmet. And a midwife called me and she's like, how quick can you get here? And I'm like, well, on my bike, gotta get to my car. And then I gotta get there. And so I walk in full bike gear and I adjusted this baby and it was glorious. Like that baby, and I say that baby had a headache. Like the frontal bone, I would just gently do some craniosacral work and just release that frontal bone. And that baby was as peaceful as an angel. And I would let go of it. And the baby would get all grunty and couldn't breathe softly and, you know, and gently the way that, you know, the baby should have been breathing. So I held the bone again, you know, until it resolved. It was amazing. And it's so beautiful. And even one midwife, it was only maybe 6 months ago that she called me and I adjusted a baby, and she wrote it all up on Facebook in this beautiful blog, and she gave me so much credit, and I was like, no. I was like, you had it handled. Like, everything was beautiful and peaceful when I walked in, and that baby was doing well, you know? I mean, like, I don't know. I also do believe that the power of the chiropractic adjustment is absolutely profound and amazing. Mm-hmm. And but I don't take credit. Like, I absolutely don't. Like, the body does the healing, you know, the power that made the body heals the body. And I'm just a facilitator. And I'm so passionate about my births. So when I did get pregnant, I had a pretty strong relationship with a local midwife. And so I just called her, or didn't call her up. I probably called the front desk or whatever and said, you know, I want to hire you for my birth, blah, blah, blah. So she also owned a local birth center. So, but I knew I was going to have a home birth. Like, it was not even a question. I'm just partial to home birth because of many, 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 many things. Do you have all night?
No.
No, like, we don't. So, but one thing is that after your baby is born and that baby is skin to skin with mom, the last thing that I want, like, if you were to choose a birth center birth, is like 4 hours after birth, you put that baby in a car seat and you have to drive home. And I'm like, no, that baby shouldn't even, number one, have clothes on. Like, that baby should be skin to skin, glued to mom's chest, you know. And like, so that's why also, like, I love home birth so much. And birth centers are right for many people. So I'm not trying to, you know, say that it's a bad choice whatsoever. The most amazing thing about living in the United States is that you have options. You can do hospital birth, birth center birth, out of hospital birth, home birth, whatever. And I also, in my doula training, I've had such a journey and such a growth, you know, in when I first became a doula, having my own biases and my own preferences and my own, like, deep-seated philosophies and getting almost emotionally invested in choices that would not be mine and not understanding, you know? So I've had to meet women where they are and totally support their choices and support them. Like, if they're well-informed, it's their body, it's their baby, it's their birth. And so I've had to really work on that and work on, in my midwifery training in school, we work on that. And also there was a doula certification. I not only did DONA, but I also did the stillbirth day doula. It's a birth and bereavement doula training. And that training, that doula program was so profound. Like, it challenges you to explore, you know, so many situations in life with expanding your family and with having babies and all of that, places I didn't want to go. And it really challenged me to look at that, you know, and no, I've never experienced pregnancy loss, but I knew that I needed to learn how to help families that do. And so that was just a beautiful journey that's itself. So anyways, going back to my birth, I had a 30-hour labor and delivery with my first. There were some challenges to overcome during the labor. My midwife did at one point in time want to transfer me to the hospital. And I was basically like, no, it's not going to happen. You know, you're going to take me kicking and screaming to the hospital. I knew that everything was okay. I mean, I had enough. But there was something that she was just a little bit concerned about with the length of the labor, and my water had been broken and just some things like that. And so we had to compromise. We came to a compromise. And then she really dug her heels in. And I give her so much credit because she pulled out all the stops. She knew how serious I was, that I wanted to birth the way that I'd planned. And so we had a chiropractor come to my house and adjust me in the middle of my labor. And she did say that had it not been for that chiropractic adjustment, and how profound is that? And like, do I pull these things in or what is the universe trying to tell me? But I was 4 centimeters after 24 hours of labor. And like, I don't know, it was probably 4 hours after that, that the chiropractor came and adjusted me. And then immediately after that adjustment, she checked me and I was 7. And so she said that there was, she really believes that it was a chiropractic adjustment that allowed me to continue to progress and have my baby. Mm. My baby was posterior and then the baby shifted, which is amazing.
Right.
I did have an acupuncturist came to the house as well.
So wow,
I
had that treatment.
And I was drinking castor oil and they were giving me herbs and I was doing everything. And I, even though it was a long labor and delivery, it was beautiful. It was, I never felt like my coping was fantastic. My doula was everything to me. We walked and we were in the tub in and out so many times. And I just, she slid out into the water and into my arms. And it was amazing and it was beautiful. And I look back on it so fondly, so beautiful and amazing. And one thing that, like, I know that you've said, like, you've recognized where you stop, like, with your journey through helping mothers with pregnancy and you know, having healthier mothers and healthier families and healthier babies and healthier outcomes, right, by what you do, right?
Yeah.
And that's what, like, that's my passion and that's my journey is, like, I am so, it's so hard for me to accept the United States statistics on maternal and health and infant health. And I just, like, it's my passion and my drive to have healthier babies, healthier mothers, and healthier outcomes, you know. And I'm going to start with it being my own clients and my own families, but I hope to hopefully have a more vast
impact.
And far-reaching impact. I don't know how that will happen. But so one of the things is that there's so much fear involved with birth in our culture, and so many women that don't even want to try or attempt a natural birth, they're just so scared. And I want every woman to have the opportunity to try. Mm-hmm. Just give it a try. And in my birth classes, I talk about the oxytocin. And oxytocin bliss after birth is so incredibly ridiculous that the oxytocin bliss after the birth of my first child was so huge and so emanating from every pore of my body that in the days right after having my baby, and that baby is on my breast, and I had my aunt with me. I know that I didn't have a husband, but that didn't even matter. I had such good support, and I had girlfriends, and I had my doula, and I just had so much love that I was like, I have got to write a letter to the President of the United States about my midwife. My midwife was the most glorious thing. I couldn't have had this baby without her. Hmm. And like, couple days later, the oxytocin's coming down a little bit. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. The president? Okay, fine. I'm going to be realistic here. The governor! The governor of the state of California needs to put a gold seal on a certificate from my midwife. And of course, a week goes by after that, and I'm like, okay, maybe the mayor. I mean, seriously, that's exactly what happened in my brain. And I know, I see that in mothers that birth naturally and they're holding their babies and the oxytocin that bonds those babies and those families together and the dad and I'm drunk with it. Like, as a birth worker, I leave those births and the sky is more blue and the grass is more green and the birds sing more beautifully. And it's that which drives me. Like, I can't get enough of it.
Your path is direct entry midwifery, right?
Yes.
Certified professional midwifery.
Yes.
What is the program like and where are you in the program?
So that's a good question because I think it's very valid and very important. So anybody who's being called knows that there's this path, which is a direct entry midwife. So after the birth of my first daughter, and I'm so ingrained and involved in the birth community, my doula, like I said, started midwifery school. She was actually in midwifery school when I had my baby. So she was like in her second year or something. And so then she had her best friend went to midwifery school just a couple years after that. And so there was like a group of my friends that went and they were like, you got to come with us. And I'm like, I can't. I'm a new mom and I want to practice and I'm single, a single mom, like working mom. Like, I just had too much. And so then a few years would go by and then a few more of my birth friends, like a doula or a childbirth educator, and they enrolled in midwifery school. And I was like, I think every time a bit of my heart just broke more and more because I'm like, I know I need to do it. I need to do it. And finally I recognize there's not the right time to have a baby, not the right time to buy a house, not the right time to go to school, you know, You just have to do it. With direct entry midwifery school, there's a couple of different things you can do. So you can actually go to a school that is like, you know, a brick and mortar school. Mm-hmm. Like you can go on campus, even though midwifery schools are probably a small, like the one in Florida was a school which was in a birth center. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went there with some classmates and we were doing classes there. Here in California, there's only one accredited school and it's in San Diego. And so they meet, I believe, once a week actually at the school on Fridays. And I haven't been to Nozomi. That's called Nozomi Midwifery School. And so most of the birth workers and midwives in this area have gone to Nozomi. But in California, if you look on the midwifery board licensure, there's about 10 schools listed that are accredited schools across the country that the California State Board recognizes as accredited schools. And so some are distance learning programs. And so when I was looking at what school, when I did move back here to California, I was looking at possibly doing Nozomi, but I also was a mom and I also had a practice and was working. And so I was like, gosh, I just don't see myself dry. And I have an aunt and uncle that live in San Diego. I don't visit them very much because there's one way down and one way back. And I do not like that drive. And I just could not see myself driving that once a week for 3 years. So I explored the other options. And I decided to enroll in what's called National Midwifery Institute. It's actually out of Vermont. And it's a distance learning program.
Okay. So your training is, when you say distance, is it online?
Yeah.
Is it, okay.
Yeah. So it's all online. I do... all of the coursework is available online, and so I'll – like there are modules that we do, and I download the modules, and then I have all my textbooks. I probably have, you know, 30 midwifery textbooks all over my desk, and, you know, the modules vary, many different topics.
Do you do it at your own pace?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So with National Midwifery Institute, it is self-paced and self-driven, and I work great that way. Like, mm-hmm. I am super disciplined, and I can do that. So other people need a more rigid, structured program. But the nice thing about National Midwifery Institute is that there are deadlines and minimum requirements. So I think some of the minimum requirements is that you could take 10 years to do the whole program if you really wanted to. But I knew that I wanted to be a midwife as soon as possible. And lo and behold, what happens when anybody enrolls in midwifery school? Well, oops, they get pregnant.
Oh, so you got pregnant.
I did. So when I moved back to California, it's a really ironic story is that I'd gone out to Florida to pursue a relationship, which didn't work out. And I come back to California, and 10 days after I stepped foot back on California soil, I met my now husband. And it was perfect and right. And so we have a baby now, and she's amazing. So
right.
I had a home birth with her. But having a baby in the middle of midwifery school definitely sent
slows
me back
it
just
down,
a little bit. So,
but once you finish all those modules,
yes.
Right, so then what else is involved in the training?
Right. So then you have an apprenticeship. So I have a preceptor. I mean, much like chiropractic school, that we have internships, and there's a preceptor. I have a local midwife that I'm her student, and so today I was at her office, and she had. I'm not doing her whole day. She's usually there from like 9 till 5 or 6, and I usually come in about 1 and stay till 5 or 6.
So you do prenatals with her?
Yeah. So I was there doing prenatals with her today. I was listening to heartbeats and I was feeling bellies, and it's amazing because I get to, because I am fully enrolled in an accredited school and I have a preceptor. I'm not doing that under a chiropractic license by any means.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's so awesome. Like, I'm in my element. Like, I was driving afterward, and I'm like, that was such a good day.
And then you also attend births with
her? I do. So, yes. So I'm on call. She has, like, a senior student who is doing most of the births. She's in what's called her primaries. Mm-hmm. So when you do your primaries, you're pretty much doing everything. Like, you're catching the baby. You're delivering the placenta, you are doing any sutures and that sort of thing. So I'm still in my assist births. So there's a certain – so sorry, I'll back up just a little bit. So she has basically like 3 students right now. One is first year, second year, and then the third year. So the first year you're pretty much doing observations, so you have to do 10 observations. And then the next year you have about 10 assist births. I meant 20. I'm so sorry. So this is for my school, 20 assist births, and then you have 25 primary births.
Okay.
And so
in observations, you're mostly watching.
Yeah.
And then
just watching.
In assist, what's the difference between an assist birth and
the primary?
Primary? Yeah.
So, yeah, the assist birth is like handing, you know, the the Chux pads or, you know, grabbing the meds or drawing up, you know, like the possibly the vitamin K if the baby's going to have vitamin K or, you know, just and I'm also like I'll get there and I'll help set up. And so I'll help blow up a birthing tub or I'll fill it with water and we'll get like the padsicles ready with the witch hazel and that sort of thing. So as an assist student, I'm doing a lot of the setup and I'm doing a lot of the breakdown. And so I'm really good at cleaning up right now, which is great, which is great. And I know I need to learn how
to do that.
That's
a really important thing because sometimes people don't want to have a home birth.
I know.
If their house is not going to be the way it was before the birth. It's sort of like why you want to eat out in a restaurant.
Right. It's crazy. Like my midwife calls her, like other, like we refer to ourselves as the birth ninjas. Like we go in, like your house is your house, and all of a sudden, zoom, it's like a maternity ward, and then zoom, we
it's
like
your house
leave.
Again.
And there's two bags, one's laundry and one's garbage. And
well, we're
like,
it.
And then you have this beautiful baby, and you're just, it's amazing.
So next year you do primary?
Yeah, I'll probably start. I have 10 more assist births and then I'll start my primaries. And so
how many primaries do you do?
I have to do 25.
25.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a certain number of hours?
Some schools have hours. This one doesn't. My old school did.
Number.
And so I was accumulating hours, but now I don't need to anymore.
Wow.
And believe me, I'm definitely putting in the hours.
And then there's tests.
Yes, there is the NARM exam, which is the National Association of Registered Midwives. And so there is it's basically a national board exam. So different states have different licensing laws. And in the state of California, to be a licensed midwife, you are licensed by the Medical Board of California. You do have to pass the NARM exam first. And you also have to have graduated from an accredited school. And then you can get your shingle. You can get your license.
Add to your list of shingles.
Yeah. I'm super excited.
Wow.
It's so
looks like
exciting.
You're giving Kristen ideas here.
I don't know.
No?
I don't know. No.
Not yet. You don't have the calling.
I do not.
Yeah.
I don't think I do not have the calling. I think I'm more called to helping after. You know, I think because I find that first
post-birth.
Year. Yeah, that first year of life is so hard.
Yeah.
So hard.
And I think that is more like, I think lactation consultant maybe.
Ooh, yeah.
Since I haven't found in my area where I live, that there aren't as many helpful ones that I found.
That would be amazing.
And so I think that's where I'm more called to, not necessarily the...
I think that's an area that's critically important to have somebody, not just someone who has the technical skills, but the people skills to really make someone feel supported.
Yes.
You know, no matter, again, almost like doula work. It's sort of like, it's not your mission, your job to point them in one birth path or another based on your agenda. It's
right.
About helping them explore their options, figure out what they want to do, and then helping realize as close to that birth plan as possible, as their birth intention as possible. But
yeah.
I think for breastfeeding, it's the same thing. You come in like so non-judgmental and so warm and big-hearted that whatever happens, you know, you'll need the technical skills too. But whatever happens, they're going to feel
at least
really,
they can try.
Yeah, it's just really supported and like they gave whatever they wanted to try their best effort.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's really cool. All right. Well, this is fascinating. I think that a lot of people get exposed to birth and get the bug.
Mm-hmm.
Exposed in lots of different ways. Sometimes, no intention to ever support women in labor in the way a midwife does. And they get excited about it, but don't know really what's involved. And I'm really thrilled to see so many more people from the birth community taking the next step and becoming midwives. Our missions are very similar in terms of educating and informing and empowering women and their partners about their choices and being supported in their choices. And, you know, I give you a lot of credit for with all that you're juggling already, taking on this all the training that you have to do. I mean, it's you could do the didactic part at your own pace to a degree, but now that you're doing practicals, it's just you never know when or for how long. Ultimately, once you hang your shingle, it's the same thing, but all the responsibility is now on you.
Right.
And it's heavy. Like you said, you really need to be called into that profession.
Yeah, you do. And like you said, there are so many people that, like through their own birth, because it was glorious and amazing and they want to help others with that, or maybe their first birth didn't go quite according to plan and
both.
They really want to not only their own redemption but to help other women and prevent other women from having the same possible not so ideal experience. But you can see that there are some that are the ones that are called are the ones that stay. And other people will get into the birthing field and 2 to 3 years into it, they're like, you know, and then they'll phase out, you know. And I also appreciate you saying, no, I don't think that it's really for me. And another thing is, like, with home birth is you can never talk somebody into a home birth.
Mm-hmm.
They have to demand a home birth. Like, they are so convinced that that's what's right for them. And that's one thing I love about my preceptor. She is the most beautiful and amazing midwife. I mean, she's – I don't even know what realm she comes from. I mean, I just want to be a tenth like her because she's so amazing, and I'm so happy that I'm working with her. But she says that when, you know, prospective clients come to her, she has them tell her why they're a good candidate for home birth, you know, and she will never talk somebody into home birth. If they're kind of on the fence, they have to, you know, really convince her that that's what's right for them.
Reminds me of the Dr. Wu. I don't know if you knew him before he retired, but he was in his 80s when he just recently retired from OB practice, and he had done 20,000 births, and he still delivered breech babies vaginally right up until the end. He had done 500 or so vaginal breech births. But people used to go to him and expect him to talk them into it. Like, hi, I have a breech and I want to have a vaginal birth. Tell me all the reasons why I should do it. And it was the total opposite.
Right.
He wanted them to say, this is my conviction and this is why I want to do it. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And then he would support that choice.
And I feel that's the way it is with natural birth too.
In general.
And I'm sure you've seen it when someone's like, oh, I'm just going to give it a try.
Right.
I'm like,
sure.
I know radio can't see my face.
Yeah, but they can feel your expression. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm going
to
just
see
committed. If I can hike up Mount Everest.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to
but
be committed.
But I'm not going to train for it.
That's right. No training.
And also, they have to be fluid and flexible and realistic and rational and know that birth doesn't always go according to plan and that sort of thing. But, yeah.
Well, you're very dynamic and inspirational to me.
Oh, thank you.
And I think our listeners will benefit a lot from what you've shared. Thank you so much for
joining us. Thank you for having me.
Kristen, thanks always for being here.
Thanks to the both of you. I feel very excited since this is what I'd like to do. And I also have a pretty awesome preceptor myself.
I would love to meet them.
You're sitting right next
all
to
right.
me. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, I did think that thought crossed my mind when we sat down. You're about to finish your chiropractic training. You're already trained as a doula and just so on the path. And
I follow you around.
And you do follow me around. There's not too many chiropractors who even work with pregnancy. So right here, this is a rare group.
Yeah.
At home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. Be sure to share us with your friends. If you like what you heard, leave a comment, especially on iTunes. Somehow that means a lot to us. And access our blog, documentaries, our YouTube series, The Real Midwives of Los Angeles, which will soon be Dr. Jennifer Angel, and our other pregnancy and parenting resources at informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.